This is a Defiantly Me production.
Hello, welcome back to the Homework Show. I'm Joy Andrews. I used to work in corporate America, and now I'm an acupuncturist, feng shui consultant, and astrology expert. And I'm here joined with my multi-talented co-host, Charlene. Tell us about yourself.
Hey, Joy. It's always good to be in a studio with you. I'm Charlene Turner Bryant, HR executive. And Joy, you know, this podcast really is my outlet to share 30 years of what I call wisdom and experiences in the workplace that I have gleaned from being in HR. So before we jump into our topic, Joy, tell me what you've been up to.
You know, I heard a whisper that you might have been to a spa recently, and I also went to a spa recently. And I dragged my husband with me, and it was the kind of spa where they've got, it's like families can go there, couples can go there, solo folks can go there, and it's the kind where they've got a bunch of saunas, and then there's the different pools, and so you basically go and you sweat it all out, and so I had been looking forward to having like a switch in my energy after doing a whole ton of work. And so I was like, you want to go sweat with me? Let's go sweat it out. And he was like, okay.
Reluctantly, right?
Do I want to do this? I don't know. And so it's the kind of place where you can spend a few hours at a time, get some good, you know, like fruit drinks to rehydrate. And yeah, it was so cool because there was a huge thunderstorm happening here. So we were inside a sauna room and you could hear the thunder and the rain happening outside. And so just to be still as you were hearing the rocking of the storm outside was really just such a cool experience.
I love that. I love that. So, you know, we're in my birthday month and I do something every day for my birthday. It used to be consumerism driven, right? So this time I said yes to an invitation to go to one of the most beautiful spas yesterday. Ooh. And I too did, I had a nice 60-minute massage. I could have gotten a facial if I had stayed for another 3 hours, but I had committed to something else, but I enjoyed it. They call it hydrotherapy circuit.
Oh,
where you do the steam, then you do the cold plunge, then you do the whirlpool, then you finish again in the cold plunge. Uh-huh. And I thought, oh my gosh, I can't do the cold plunge. And this one was in there. She said, just come in, just walk in, walk into it, walk into it. And I thought, oh, I love that way she said, walk into it. And I started walking into that cold water. It was really interesting experience to have, but I was grateful that I did it because as I was talking to people about the benefits of cold plunge, I didn't realize it had that many benefits. So I'm glad I did it.
And it sort of shocks you awake, right?
Yes.
Did you think you were dying? It's a shock to the system.
It was like, where did you take me? Where am I going? So I didn't realize the health benefits that a cold plunge has. And so I know a lot of people are putting cold plunge pools here in California. They're putting cold plunge pools. And I said, okay, well, I don't have the space for that. So I turned my shower on as cold as it could be this morning. And boy, did it give me a boost.
Ooh, yeah. Isn't that amazing how it can feel so refreshing? You can feel like alive, tingling, energized. Is that what you felt?
Yes.
Or were you sad?
I felt that.
Sad and cold.
I wasn't sad. No, I felt energized. I felt like I just took like a B12, so I felt really energetic. And I needed to be energetic for this topic that Joy has chosen for today. So get ready. We're going to jump into it. I'm going to be as vulnerable as I can and share my journey on this topic and hope that it helps someone listening. So do you want to introduce the topic?
Well, I wanted to bring up the topic of fertility because it's such a huge, widespread topic with so many angles in it in this day and age. And
yes,
we like to refer to it as the fertility journey, right? Because there's a whole stretch of actions and conversations and decisions that happen around the concept of wanting to have a baby, have a family. Right. And right. I see a lot of patients in my practice who are any point along their fertility journey. So people who are just starting to have the thought, either by themselves or with their partner or with their spouse. And then there's some people who call me the day before they're going to get a fertility procedure done. And they're like, can I quick come get acupuncture to try and give it my best chance? Right. And then, you know, I see people on the other side of the fertility journey who have either given birth or they could not give birth. And so there's an ache either way. There's an ache in the heart either way. There's an ache in the heart of how much work it's taken. And there's an ache in the heart of, you know, a dream lost or a dream unrealized. And now what do I do with my life? You know, sort of a reset aspect. So there are so many complicated emotions that I see in this journey. And a lot of people are, you know, 15 years ago, when I started to get into this, it was a little bit of a sell to tell people this can help you in your fertility journey. And now I'm getting patients sending me research articles saying, acupuncture is supposed to help me on my journey. Can you help me? Wow. So I don't have to do the sell anymore because the research has been done to really pave the way for acupuncture to really stand out as one of the tools that can help women and families really. Yeah. Manage their body and their mind and their spirit as they're going through their journey. So and this isn't going away. You know, this isn't a trend.
No,
this is the future, I think, of the way people will grow their families. And so I think we have to have more conversations about it and invite more ways of banishing the doubt, banishing the self-criticism, banishing the judgment around it, banishing all the shadows around the secrecy and the shame that it can bring up, you know, and really bring that to the surface so we can empower women and empower families, empower couples, empower single people. Some people are doing this on their own, you know, to really feel and tap into their strength through this process.
Wow. When you brought this topic up, I was like, oh my gosh, this has been something that I haven't really talked about. And our friend Lisa, who's also starting her podcast, she was on my fertility journey with me. And granted, it was, you know, my daughter just turned 21 last year. You know, it was that long ago, but you're right. That journey is still in my head. And I wish I had acupuncture to assist me during that time because, you know, like you said, there's so many decisions, there's so many things that happen. I'll encapsulate my journey just really quickly. You know, my father said to me early on when I started in my teens, if you get pregnant without being married, you're going to have that baby and you're going to keep on with life. And so I was on every type of birth control until it was that time. Finally got married. We were ready to have another child, you know, because my husband had three beautiful teenagers. I hadn't had any. So I said, okay, let's have one together. Because I always wanted to be, you know, I wanted to be a birth mom, right? And so got checked out and I was in my 30s, right? And so that whole tagline, geriatric. So I got checked out. Everything was fine. And then it was like, well, your husband's not fine. You know, his swimmers are a little slow. You need some assistance. And there's a thing called IVF. I'm like, whatever. What is that? Right?
Because that was brand new, 22 years ago.
It was brand new. And my doctor was like, I know a practice. And he sent me to the doctor. And it felt like artificial. Mm. It felt so artificial to me. It was like, I waited this long. Why can't I have it natural? Why can't I be like all these women that go, oops, I'm coming up pregnant, you know, without even trying, you know? And you're right, that point where women hear that word of either it's them or their partner, that it's like, now we got to go through this artificially.
And that didn't get talked about back then, right?
It did not.
21, 22 years ago, you probably went to those visits in silence. I don't know. Did you talk about that with your friends, with your family?
No. When you went in, I looked at the people's faces, the women like me, we all had like this look of something's wrong with us.
Oof.
That we have to be here. Now, you know, the practice, you know, try to make you feel as normal, but it felt like something was wrong. And to be honest, I was a little angry with my husband. It created a little conflict there because I was like, man, you had three beautiful children already. Why them swimmers slowing down now? And, you know, I thought men could have kids until they're 80 and 90 years old. And so it brought a little bit of conflict there. Wow. But what I loved about this practice is that it encouraged the partners to come together and to be in the process from day one. So every appointment he had to come to, he had to be involved, and it helped us work through some of the anger. So I hear what your mm-hmm. patients are saying that are coming to you, like, it's stressful. It's just pausing at that beginning part right now brings back a lot of feelings of, man, dang, I didn't think this was going to be this easy. I thought I was going to have to relax. I thought I could read the book that says this position or this day or that day, you know, mm-hmm. is the best day to, you know, you're in ovulation. And for women, when it doesn't work like that and you come up the next month with their period on, that's heavy.
Heavy and isolating.
Yes.
Because people aren't coming to work, you know, people have to come to work the next day, or they have to say, I've got a doctor's appointment, I've got to take off for this. And then they just have to go on about their day as if nothing's happening. You know, we've talked about compartmentalization on a previous podcast episode, and this is the epitome of compartmentalization that primarily is resting on the shoulders of women. You know, right. Men are not having to go to as many of the doctor's visits as women are, and are going through a little bit less of the testing aspect. So they can hold the emotional anchor from the sidelines, but the women are really in the ones, like, you know, going through the rigorous testing and the ups and downs of the self-blame, not self-blame.
Right. And add the component that IVF was so expensive. Thank God, I know I'm thanking God that our medical covered, you know, a number of attempts, right? But other families that saying, I got a shot at this and I'm going to spend $10,000 of my own money and I don't know if it's going to work out. That financial burden too, and the stress, coupled with mm-hmm. the fact that you have to go through this process because this is the only way you can get pregnant. I knew about acupuncture, because I think it would have helped release some of the stress, the internal stress that I was holding, that I wasn't talking about, that I was shouldering, still working, right? Still mm-hmm. having work stress and trying to go through this process. The doctor saying, and you need to be relaxed. And this is this time of your life, you need to be stress-free. I'm thinking, dude, what are you talking about? Right?
Yeah. And that's partially why acupuncture is helpful. It's twofold. I get referrals from fertility clinics now who send patients to me after they've had their first consult there to say, please go for some stress relief. And it's also going to improve blood flow to the uterus and potentially improve your body's health. And so, but the twofold is really the mental aspect, that emotional and mental release of what you're talking about and rebalancing, as well as the actual biological improvement of the blood flow, simply just the blood flow through the body and balancing the body systems. But that release of that emotional pent up stress and that compartmentalization is so key for the body's biological systems to actually work better. You know,
it's absolutely
really hard to reverse engineer the body to get healthier when the mind and the heart are like, oh, I feel so tight, you know?
Yes. And then too, I love what you're saying. And then too, women of faith that have to go through this, right? You know, you read the Bible and it says, oh, your quiver should be full and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a faith aspect to this journey as well, because from day one, I had to bring my faith in. Mm-hmm. I had to have that faith step in, because this was life altering. I thought, you know, oh my gosh, my bloodline is ending. My family lineage is ending.
Wow.
Right. If we had a room of women who were going through that journey and we said, what was the things that you were thinking that you would not manifest or see ever? It would be such a range of forward looking, not just like what I'm going through right now, but forward looking, you know.
Wow.
If I don't have a child, then this is it. This is it for my family. It stops with me. And it is huge. You know, the implications of it is really huge. It's very drug intensive. So I had to take shots. And you find out things medically that you didn't even know were happening. I realized I had a protein S, and he said, you're going to have to be on blood thinner the whole time you're pregnant. I said, on top of these other shots I got to take a blood thinner every day of my pregnancy? Mm-hmm. He said, absolutely. He said, because you can't formulate a clot, right? Mm-hmm. And so that first consultation with the doctor, you know, fast forward, we're now at the how many, you know, I said, I want to have put 3 eggs in me, because what's the chances of me having twins? Because I want to make sure that I only have to go through this process once.
Wow.
And people, you know, I used to be judgmental of people using IVF to have multiple births. Mm. And, but at the same time, I, looking back, I too was trying to say, hey, if I only get one shot and one shot alone, then give me my 2 babies right now.
Yeah.
And so the doctor, he didn't want it. I said, put 3, because, you know, and to hear it almost like you're bartering and negotiating. And it just felt so, like I said, so artificial, so, you know, like it's so much, it was a transaction when it was something that's supposed to be happening naturally. I don't know what you're hearing your patients talk about, but
yeah, the fertility industry huge. Almost sounds like you're standing on the New York Stock Exchange floor, because you hear numbers constantly. You hear, what are the chances? What's the chance of this working? What's the chance of that's working? How do I improve my chances? What is the outcome of this? What is the drug doses of this? You know, it's like these formulas and these metrics and these percentages. And I get asked that all the time. And it's coming from such an inorganic place. So, but we've had to be trained in this language, this transactional language of having to assess our bodies in a completely mechanical way in order to maximize the chances. Because to your point, this one-shot feeling is really pervasive. This is what a lot of people are going through, is they may have one shot, or it takes so much energy, time, energy, money, and medication to get you through a round, that if you have to muster that up again, it has to come from a really deep resourced place.
Oh, definitely. Most definitely. And you're right. The transactional language, it made you understand how they've studied the body, and how they studied, you know, ovulation, how they studied, you know, getting pregnant, and, you know, that whole notion of petri dish babies. And, you know, looking back, it was like, yeah, it felt like an experiment. I felt like I was part of this experiment, right? But at the same time, I had to feel like I was part of improving the process, making it more effective, you know, in terms of being able to have a viable, you know, first round, right? And so as I walked through that journey with my doctor, it was so interesting when we got to the point where it was now time to implant, right? It was like, okay. So we talked about, well, we negotiated. I wanted 3. He said, 3, you could, he said, no, you can't carry 3 babies. And then here's the other piece, Joy. A lot of the women that were in their early to mid 30s, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're talking about, and 40, not because we wanted to wait that long. It's just, mm-hmm. that's what happened for us, right? Mm-hmm. And so he's like, oh, no, because you're too old. I'm like, okay. I said, well, I'll do 2. Let's put 2 eggs and let's see how they work. And I think you can carry twins. I'm sitting here with my husband next to me saying, okay, You okay? You good if we had twins? Okay, I'm good if we have twins. Right. We're like, what is this process here?
Yeah.
Then you probably see your patients who have probably had multiple eggs inserted, right? And they're going, oh my gosh, if I lose both, I have zero.
Right. There's the numbers game again. Yeah. And I mean, I met a patient recently who she is in her early 50s and she was an IVF baby herself. Mm. So it was new when you were going through the process and it was barely talked about 50 years ago. So she was the result. She was one of the first babies that was, she's in that category of one of the first babies that was born. It was so not talked about because the chances were so low at the time. Also, it was experimental, like you were saying. The chances were so low that it just did not get talked about, where she, as her mother's child, didn't even know until she took one of those DNA ancestry tests that she had a different father. And that was that was one of the things that came out. And it was like, now we're having the conversation, you know? So
yes, that's so right. Because if you were single doing it, you had donated sperm that you were using.
Yeah. So the risk factor, you know, it was really that, like, so there's so much faith, like what you said, there's so much faith hinging on, you know, trying to point all of our efforts into this one narrow option.
Right.
So how did you bring Lisa in?
Oh my gosh. So you really need a tribe, because you have to take injections at a certain time of the day.
Yeah.
And some of that time was at work. Mm. And so I literally needed somebody at work who I trusted. And I really didn't tell her what I was going through. I just said, yeah, I'm going through IVF. I got to take some shots. But I didn't talk about it in terms of, because I'm excited, because I'm going to start our family. No, no. It's a process, and you got to stick into the process and don't deviate. And one thing that the doctor told me, he said, you have to stick to this. And so literally we would go in the ladies' room and she would poop, stick me. Right. Wow. Or I would have to go and stick. And it took a while for me to give myself this self-injection that I needed for the blood thinner. And it was hilarious because she didn't want to shoot me up. And I'm like, you know, you become vulnerable. I'm exposing my hip. I'm taking my underwear down, you know, because I had to get that shot at that certain time. I'm like, do it. We got one more minute to go. Wow. We happen to live in the same I was living with, you know, we were waiting for our condo to be built. We moved in her house and she gave me some shots at night. And thank goodness that, you know, people who have work friends that really turn into friends. This was one of those times where I was grateful that I had a work friend that turned into a friend, because it was such a vulnerable period in my life. Mm. And, you know, her going through it with me. And that moment where you go back to the doctor, and a lot of women are probably coming to you probably before this point, where they're getting to find out whether or not they're pregnant or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's an eternity of waiting. Whether it's a 2-week period of waiting after the process to get the official blood work, that is an eternity. And so that is one of the hardest things to do, I think, for humans, is to wait for something that is going to change the course of your life.
Right. And you don't want to take pregnancy tests at home because they could give you a false positive. And so to imagine you've gone through weeks of building up, right, thinking you're pregnant, to go to that appointment and sit before the doctor and he tells you this cycle did not work. Mm. Imagine that. Imagine that coming to you, Joy, in the treatment room.
Yeah, I do get that. And it's full grief. And it's full grief that they have internalized, again, the self-blame, self-criticism, the questioning, the wondering, the why me, the could I have done something better? You know what I mean? Because the
should
people
have
who
had
go
a baby
through this,
earlier.
You're right. All the questions, crisis of faith, you know, and these people who go through this process are straight A students. You know, they do the best possible thing they can for their body. They research a lot. They eat really well. They're trying to make this happen, you know? So when the results don't come back how you want it, it is crushing. you know? And so to your point of having a tribe, having a community of people around you, having somebody that you can talk to, whether it is, you know, your counselor, therapist, acupuncturist, friends, family, anyone who can help you shoulder the news right. as you're going through it. Because there is beauty on the other side. There is life on the other side. There is purpose on the other side of it. But getting through that process, that wave of grief and shock mm-hmm. and the self-criticism is really yeah. like, women do not need just another chance for self-criticism. We've got, we have got to turn that corner with all of our might. So it's so critical at that time to be, you know, so self-compassionate.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And I would say my faith was being tested, right? Because I was around people who were pregnant, who got pregnant easily. My cousins on my mother's sister, they will be here well after any of us will be here because they just have a proliferation. Fertility was not, I didn't think was an issue. And so went into that appointment and the doctor said, "You're pregnant." And I was like, "Oh, hallelujah, thank you." And both eggs are viable. And so you were having twins. And I was like, "Oh," I thought, "oh, I got my two. I'm so excited. I got my two. But he said, "Don't get excited. It's still early." I said, that's okay. And we left there and we were like relieved for a reason that a lot of people that go through IVF are relieved. We don't have to pay $10,000 again. You see how it goes back to money?
Yeah.
You know, so your joy is sort of kind of eclipsed with the financial burden, right? Or the time, but it was still, the journey wasn't ended. The journey did not end there.
Right.
The journey did not end there. And then you probably treat people who probably were like me, who internally worried.
Oh, yeah.
Is this going to stay? Is it going to stick the whole time? Am I going to go full term?
Oh, yeah. This, I think, is one of the most magical experiences, I think, that we have the opportunity to do in this lifetime. And it is what women do when they are holding the possibility of 100% life and 100% death at the same moment for days and weeks on end.
And months.
They are holding all possibility of hope and all reservation of expectation at the same time. It is all of life itself, all the joy, all the hope, and all the do not get hung up on this. Do not put all your eggs in one basket. Do not put all your hope in this at the same time. It's huge.
It is heavy. It is like walking with, you know, your shoulders having two blocks on it. Like, which shoulder is going to prevail? Is it going to be, you know, I'm going to go full term? Or is it going to be at some point that the two of them will not make it, you know? And then you, and going to these appointments weekly. And here's the workplace I have to bring in. If you do not work for a boss that has compassion, who has your best family interest in mind, that's even another layer of stress because you have to go to appointments. Like, they called me up and said, "You have to come right now."
Right.
And so imagine, Joy, you got to go tell your boss, "Hey, I got to go." And you had to do the same thing early in the week. You had to do the same thing. And that's why I'm grateful for these laws that are coming out, these protections, because unless you've gone through the journey, you do not know what that journey is like. And I think some managers and employers and even HR professionals, we don't educate our managers enough of the process and why you can come alongside and help them grow their family, right? By allowing them, you know, some of these concessions because they need it, right? And so, you know, the excitement of both, we were excited. We were like, okay, you know, but then I started bleeding.
Oof.
We were getting ready to go to Hawaii because I was like, okay, we can go to Hawaii. You know, we're out of that first trimester. We're good. And I started bleeding before going on the trip. And I went into deep depression and I wailed and I thought, I said, God, you let me get pregnant to take it away.
Oh.
And I wept and the doctor said, come in, you got to come in, you got to come in. And having that ultrasound to determine whether or not both were gone or just one was gone, it felt like I didn't want to know. That's when the depression kicked in.
Wow.
That stayed for the rest of the pregnancy.
It stayed.
Yes, because one was still viable. Mm-hmm. And I see one heartbeat. So you've already lost right there. But you can't grieve because you got this other one that is fighting to live.
Wow.
So I got to give it to them. They were great. They had, resources, but they were strange resources. In this kind of intimacy, this kind of personal experience, you want people around you that know you, mm-hmm. right? Who can encourage you. But at the same time, you don't want to talk because you're afraid that what you're talking about may not exist 2 months from now or a month from now.
Mm-hmm.
So you being in that journey with them the whole time is necessary.
Yeah, all supports are necessary. It is such an incredibly weighty journey, like you said, like bricks on your shoulders, to go it alone. It is so intensive. So yeah. You carry to term, holding all that inside you.
Yes. And I think, some women, are once they get pregnant, they have no complications. They take it all the way through, right? Go back to normal life. But then you have some people like me who didn't go back to normal life.
Wow.
Because at 26 weeks, she was starting to open up. She wanted to come early and she wanted to be born. And I'm hearing, oh my gosh, your cervix is opening up. She's going to be born at 26 weeks. She's going to have these, if she survives, she'll have this, this, and this, and this, and this. And I was like, whoa, you got to be kidding me. I said, no. I said, and my doctor was, he was of a different faith. And I said, you know what? You're giving up on me right now. So guess what? My God never gives up on me and I will go to full term.
Wow.
And he says, well, you're going to need it. You're going to need it. So I had to have emergency cerclage. And then I had to go to the hospital. I went to my hospital more times before I gave birth than you could imagine because it was scarce, right? It was scarce. I had to be on bed rest for 5 months. So people that go through IVF, they may or may not have the usual pregnancy. And imagine working for a boss who would probably say, I'm going to fire you or you won't have a job because you got to be out on bed rest for 5 months to expand your family.
Right. On one hand, the workplace is difficult to navigate because you've got to ask for the time off to get to these doctor's visits. And yes. You've got to navigate maternity leave. How much can you take? How much can you not take? But on the other hand, the workplace is a bedrock of a foundation. It does hold a modicum of stability for somebody because it is the one aspect that is holding a routine that is going to stay in the background while you go through this roller coaster of a journey, So it is really important and people plan on that. People plan on being able to have a workplace where they can come back after the birth or whether if there's not a birth to continue on to have something that has a little bit of rhythm that they can grab onto and put their energy back into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It is. It was, I was grateful for the boss that I had at the time. But I had to be vulnerable and I had to communicate to that shame piece you talked about earlier. It's like, well, she didn't have to go through this. And she just said she was, so to tell somebody that you've worked with that got pregnant naturally, right, that you had to go through this process. What I found was I too had to go through the process. So when you shared it, it opened up so more women were talking about in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And it felt like there was a small community there of trust. And that's what you need. And, you had to listen to your doctor. I had to stay on bed rest for five months, up and down, worrying, worry, 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 depressed, worry, depressed, worry, depressed through the whole time. Mm. That one of the things you, as you treat people that that have gone through the full cycle to deliver. I went back to my doctor at 32 weeks, at 31 weeks. He was like, boy, your prayer life is strong. You got a real good, strong connection to God because I gave up on you. You can get up out of that bed and walk. And wow. I thought I was in the clearing because I had to lean into my faith. I had to lean into, yes, this is a journey. Yes, this is hard. But you wouldn't bring me through all of this if there was not a expected end. Mm. And then I got not tested because it's not a test. I got a reverberation of my faith again at delivery. I thought I was going to have a normal delivery, right? No, I end up having an emergency C-section. As soon as they gave me the epidural, I went boop. And I never, my water never broke. Nothing. I didn't have any of that. Right. But I knew I wasn't having a baby because I was having contractions. Doc drove myself to the hospital after eating Chipotle because I've been
first really? Time out. Really? You like, drove Mary. Yourself?
After- I had to drive myself from the doctor. He said, I said, I'm in labor. He said, yes, you are. He said, wait for your husband. I said, I can't. I got to get to the hospital. And got to the hospital. Our daughter was with us. We called her up and said, you know, your little sister's getting ready to get born. Come on in because I wanted them to bond initially. I didn't want any step this or second that. I wanted them to bond. And so she was there, had emergencies, got the epidural. My blood pressure dropped.
Really?
And the doctor came in and he said, boy, he was all calm. And he said, oh, I guess she's just ready to come out. I said, Dr. Margolius, I said, God did not bring me this far for her to die right before delivery. Get her out. Mm. This isn't going to be another area where you're going to be helpful in having a tribe. I went into postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to see her. I didn't want to hold her. Mm-hmm. I did not because of fear and that whole worration throughout the pregnancy. And that's why I love that people are coming alongside with acupuncture because the range of emotions that you go through, you know, before, during, after. And if it wasn't for Lisa and some friends at the time that asked me the question, have you seen her? I said, no. They were like, what? I said, she's fine. I didn't even see her when they brought her to me. It was like, I could not look at her.
Wow.
Because I couldn't attach because I didn't know uh-huh. whether or not it was going to be real and stay.
Was it safe to attach? Yeah. Wow.
So this whole fertility journey, whether you do it, you know, you get pregnant, you know, without having to go through IVF, it is a journey. And it's something where you have to have an anchor. You have to have an anchor in your faith. You're going to have an anchor in your community. You're going to have an anchor in yourself.
In yourself, and to say, yes.
I got to do everything I can to sustain life inside of me.
Yes.
This is not about me. This is about the life inside of me. And Lisa came and she's like, have you saw her? Nope. You want to see her? Nope. She had that nurse bring that baby in. I was like, oh, who's this? Who's that? I don't know who this person is.
Wow.
Right. And I had to work through that over the first 3 months of her life.
Wow. Another part of the journey.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, I hope what we've talked about help women understand it is a journey. You don't have to do it alone. You don't have to suffer alone. You know, there is some trauma and that you experience, but having to talk through the trauma of it, you know, that's what Lisa wants me to do now. She's like, hey, Charlene, you never told me the story. And I'm like, yeah, I need to tell you the whole story. You saw bits and pieces of my journey, but you really don't understand the journey, right? And so, but I am grateful for you and other practitioners that are coming alongside of women in their fertility journey. There's so many things that we've talked about on this show that can help. Laying in bed for 5 months with a monitor on, not sleeping at night because you don't know if that monitor is going to stop beating and hearing the heartbeat. You know, I needed something to to give me strength. And I leaned into my faith for that. And I leaned into being, you know, a good compliant patient. And so as people come to you, I do hope they come with compliancy, because you need to be willing to go through the process and understand it could work. It may not work, but there's a whole nother section to this story. We could do a part two and a part three on fertility, because it is such a big topic that needs to be digested. But I wanted to share a little bit of my journey in hopes that people listening could to hear that you're not alone, that you can get through it. And even if it doesn't work the first time and you have the resources or your assurance says two more, three more times, you know, those are opportunities to try it again. And looking back, Joy, you would have thought after that experience that I would not want to go through the cycle again. The only reason I didn't go back is because everybody said, you want to do that again? I said, yeah, I'll do it again. They're like, you're crazy. Do you remember what you went through? It was like, you know what? No, I don't remember, because I was going through it. Mm-hmm. I was walking through it, and some things stayed on you, right? Some things attached, which is that trauma piece that I think we should have a second show about, that talks about fertility trauma, and that needs to be worked out as well so that it doesn't get carried in to your raising and nurturing. Mm-hmm. I think that's where that hover mom came in. I think we could talk about that and how hover mom might be some symptoms of trauma, fertility trauma.
Interesting. Birth trauma, right.
That weren't dealt with or connected at that time. So, so you all have heard me be a little bit more vulnerable on our podcast.
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing this, Charlene. And I just want to say to everybody out there that this is welcome. This is deeply welcome. Yes. And that's the message that I want to send to folks who come in for acupuncture or who are going through any part of this journey, is all aspects of this are welcome. This is not a, you know, strawberries and roses and romance and pink lights all the time. This is not for the faint of heart. This is a really beautiful, holy journey. And I'm here for all of it. All the hardness, all the big feelings, all the highs and lows, because there are highs and there are lows. And they are all welcome. And I've never met a mom who is 100% just saying, I am all for this. I am super excited all the time. I am having the time of my life, and I am willing to give my all for this because it's so great. And I know I want a kid. You know, there's even this indecision through this whole process. And that is okay. That is welcome as well.
Okay. Yeah. And also too, you're going to learn more about who you are through the process. So even coaching will help you, because things are going to come up about you as a person, you as a career person, you know, you making a decision. Do I exit the workplace? Do I stay in the workplace? You know, it is such a great topic, Joy, and we can go on and on and on. I think there's a part two and a part three to this, but we're going to go ahead and close by first saying we are grateful that you listen to us. We're grateful that you share our podcast, and we're grateful that we are touching lives and impacting lives. So thank you for listening to the Homework Podcast, sincerely from both Joy and my heart. And if you want to hear more about us or listen after this episode, you know, head over to our website, thehomeworkpod.com. If you want to hear more episodes, please like and share, because this is for you. We're doing this in service to you. So until next time, this is Charlene and Joy with the Homework Podcast, saying listen, change, do, transform, whatever it is, so you can have the life that you would like to have.
Yes, grateful for you. Till next time.